webcasting to the world.
Do you remember the moment that you saw yourself in God and God in you, and you were one with the universe and God and everybody?
Knowing the truth about the gospel.
You were one with the prostitutes and pimps and priests and kings, and there was nobody on earth that was better than you nor less than you.
That we are all righteous.
And no one on earth was any less in Christ than anyone else.
That's Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution. And now, here's Glenn Klein online.
Thank you, Robert Moore, and greetings, you beautiful humans. This is Glenn Klein online. It is Hump Day, Wednesday, November 30th, 2011. The only last Wednesday of November, 2/11, in the history of the planet. The phones are ringing already, folks. We're very excited to welcome you in on this Gospel Revolution Wednesday night. Better late than never is a saying, but better early than late is even a better saying. And we have been late on a number of occasions, but tonight we are early, but on purpose. Welcome in to the first ever 8:45 p.m. Eastern Standard Time in the United States of America, start time of the Gospel Revolution webcast. Very excited about it. Want to invite you to get in early and often into the toll-free line from Canada and the United States, 1-800-436-3260, 1-800-436-3260. That is toll-free, as I said, in Canada and the U.S. of A. Anywhere around the world, if you're listening early this evening, give us a call at 813-425-5773, 813-425-5773. Wanted to get some calls in right at the top of the show here, because in about 15 minutes from now, we're going to be hearing from Steve and Aaron Essery, the authors of the new book, The Hour We Least Expected. I got a lot of hum on this here line. Mikey?
Yeah?
You know, I always like to give you a very fine introduction. And I will, but I need you to call back on the regular line there, because there's some...
Okay.
All right, so call back, and then I'll give you a more righteous introduction.
A more fitting.
More fitting. More proper. All right, bye. See? The hum went away. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, even though that we are over 6 years into this webcast and newly minted 75-minute version on the normal webcast evening, there's still technical issues to deal with. And so we're having Michael call back. As I was saying, we are going to be having special guests tonight, Steve and Aaron Essery. And we'll be taking your calls along the way as well at 800-436-3260, 813-425-5773. Sean O'Halloran waiting in the Bay of the Holy Spirit studios to take your call. And now please officially, in with all due diligence, welcome online the Most High Holy Reverend, the False Christ, the... Kentucky Colonel, the teacup poodle, not the Holy Spirit of the Gospel Revolution, all the way across the Gulf of Mexico from the home offices. Please welcome Mr. Michael Williams. Michael!
Hey, Glenn.
That's much better. I don't know what's up with our normal situation.
I don't know either, but we will always have a backup.
We
got a backup plan.
We venture on, and I am very, very excited about this evening. You know why?
Yeah.
Why?
Why are you excited?
Because we are going to be discussing the power of God tonight.
You mean the gospel?
I do indeed, Michael. I mean the gospel.
Very good.
And the gospel, ladies and gentlemen, gives you, to coin a phrase, a rational, vital, logical, mental disposition. And so this day, this particular Wednesday, when the maestro of the Gospel Revolution, Greg Amberge, was having eye surgery in Cincinnati, I knew that he was having this laser surgery, and it was for a fairly or potentially troublesome situation. It was not for LASIK or whatever, but I mean it was not a a fly by night situation, something he was concerned about. So I gave him a call about, I don't know, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, which went right to voicemail, which, you know, I wasn't surprised coming out of surgery. And a little while longer, maybe 10 minutes later, I got a text from Greg that said, the surgery went perfect. Thank you for not praying. And I did the same thing. I literally chuckled out loud. And what is it, Michael, that the gospel does that allows somebody that is coming in or out of surgery to thank you for not praying? And by the way, and meaning it.
Well, first, I just have to say, what an odd group of people. And to this planet and to this religious system, definitely an odd statement.
Really, really, really is. I mean, it's just so freaking bizarre. I was talking to some guy today who's been down the road with us a little bit in the gospel revolution, and he had a kind of a cool little thing happen in his life, and he said it had been almost a lifelong answer to prayer. And he said, and now he understands, you know, the legalistic nature of Christianity and the all-sufficiency of Christ and all that. But when he said it was almost a lifelong answer to prayer, it made my skin crawl. What is it that you and I are responding in laughter and in joy, if you will, to Greg's comment, thank you for not praying, and yet this other guy's comment about it being an answer to prayer, just about wanting to make me Ralph?
Well, I think the most powerful thing about it is, and if the gospel is the power of God, then that's my focus of this discussion about prayer. I'm not out to try to talk people into not confessing their sins or not praying or not doing anything, pro or con, good or bad, good or evil. It's all of that's completely out of the picture. But if this is an issue where that the gospel is being the power of God, and we know that obviously that even though the gospel is the power of God, it in and of itself can be limited by something, because the power of God is obviously not in operation in the planet and in a way that we could extrapolate if we were to extrapolate. But we certainly see it certainly more present than it ever has been before. And, you know, I have to go back to a conversation I had with Richard Mull 2 weeks ago in discussing this. And this will be our mulling it over segment. And,
we need to get a sponsor for the mulling it over segment.
Absolutely, it's a perfect segment for sure.
Mulling It Over, brought to you by Pabst Blue Ribbon. drink responsibly.
We were in this discussion, and he called me back. You got to realize, when you got somebody like Richard Mull in the crowd, you are going to be every word that you say is going to be gone over and listened to. If you think nobody's listening, you better not say it in front of Richard Mull, because he is listening. And he brought up the Mount of Transfiguration, and he said, "Now, Michael, you said this and you said this," and he said, "But what was Jesus?" He said, "You said Moses was the law, and he was, and Elijah was the prophets, so it represented the law and the prophets." He said, "What did Jesus represent?" And, of course, by then my mouth is dropping over like, duh, you know. And he said, "There's only one left." And I said, "Well, that would have been the Psalms." And he said, "And the interesting thing about the Psalms is that the Psalms are not only prayers and praises, but it is also law and prophets. So in the body of the Psalms, you have all all of these, the law of the Psalms and the prophets, you don't only have just prayer and praise, as I have singled out of the book of Psalms. It is also a book full of the law, and it is also a book full of prophecy. There's many of the prophecies about Jesus that is in the book of Psalms. So this fulfillment issue is very powerful, and we're going to be talking about to the Esri brothers in just a moment, and in their book title is so powerful to me, in The Hour We Least Expected. And see, if something happened in this hour, as that we came to understand, the hour, the day of the Lord, all of this was very Isaiah terminology, and we don't have a right to take it out of its setting, but let it rest there. Now, if indeed these things were fulfilled, then we understand that the issue of prayer and praise, why is praise fulfilled? Because we are a praise now. We are a praise to God. God is not looking to us to offer up praises. He came to dwell in us. And instead of saying, if you praise me, I'll come and dwell in your midst, like he did with Israel. That was just a type and shadow of God. God has to dwell in praises, but he has to dwell in perfection. So he had to perfect man so he could dwell in man. Therefore, all praise has been fulfilled. I'm not saying you can't say, wow, thank you and hallelujah. You know, as our brother Jackie Varner says, hallelujah to you all the time. So, and also with prayer. I can't find anything to pray about anymore.
Well, you know, it's this whole issue of fulfillment, as you say, is so incredible. It's so profound. And I think by listening to you talk, I got my answer. The reason that my skin crawled when he said that is the same reason that my skin crawls when somebody talks about a further judgment coming on the planet.
Right.
Or when I see people flagellating themselves in public, trying to figure out how to seek penance in a public way. Because it has all been fulfilled, and it doesn't take away from the work of the cross and the work of Christ when somebody does that, when somebody predicts a future judgment.
Right.
It doesn't take away from the work and the fulfillment at Golgotha by Yeshua when somebody says this was an answer to prayer. But what it is, frankly, is an affront to that work. Or,
well, I would use a different term, because it doesn't make any difference whether it's an affront or not. It is a distraction from.
Because the gospel is
the power of God. You can't, whether it's an affront to it or not is fairly irrelevant. It is the fact that it is replacing the gospel. It is taking up space that the gospel should be taking up in the mind and in the brain, which is the gospel is the power of God, and I'm persuaded it is, as Paul was. Then these things of unfulfilled prayers or praises or prophecies or laws, they all are replacing, they all occupy a space in the brain and in the mind and the soul that was designed for the gospel to reside in.
Right, and what I was going to say was, this is what I just got done looking at in your book. One, it's what Paul called doing despite to grace.
Absolutely.
It's despite, to spite, if you will, the grace of God.
Yeah, absolutely.
To call
into question things that have been fulfilled is certainly an offense to the grace of God, and the reason it's an offense to the grace of God is because it takes a place that only grace should take. There's a way humans ought to think that is prescribed and designated by the gospel that will cause humans to arrive at the best possible conclusions for their lives and others around them.
What do you mean that there's a way the human brain should think? What do you mean by that?
Free, number one, free from all judgment, free from all guilt, free from all dread of punishment from God, and free from all hope of reward based on performance, whether that be prayer, praises, actions, deeds, obedience to laws, or thinking that you are somehow a part of an unfulfilled prophecy.
Or tithing. Ooh.
Tithing, the list can go, as we know. I mean, something occupied all of our time during Christianity from daylight till dark. So it's all of those things. It amazes me that I made it to a point, and we have made it to a point, to where we cling so lovingly and endearingly to the gospel and have so totally abandoned Christianity.
That is so true, man. Oh, all right. Well, this is the time where we would be normally starting the webcast. And aren't you glad that we're already 15 minutes into getting saved? Hallelujah to you, to quote the poet laureate of the gospel revolution. This is Glenn Klein online. That's Michael Williams. We're going to take our first caller, and then we're going to get to the Esseries. You're not going to want to miss anything. Please let us go now to the Frozen Chosen, the Frozen Tundra, if you will, the Central Wisconsin correspondent, the medicine man of the Gospel Revolution. Please welcome online the legendary and author himself, Pep Washburn. Pep!
Rabbi!
Pepe, how saved have you gotten just listening to this conversation?
Repeat that, please.
If I have to, I will. I said, how saved have you gotten in the last 15 minutes or so listening to this conversation?
Yeah, I would say my heart's beating faster. Yeah,
that's
definitely.
That's awesome.
That's like he's on a 900 line or something.
we just got to get this in here, though. You know, the Packers are 17 games straight now.
Yeah, I know. The Packers are God's team, clearly, in northern Wisconsin. But we've sworn against talking sports and weather these days, Pep, because we are trying to get the webcast now into 75 minutes. But, I'm so glad you called, Pep, because I sent a number of revolutionaries the Esseries website for their new book, which we're going to be talking about. And you, both being an author and also an avid follower and student of the gospel, was very excited to see that that work in print.
Yeah, I'm excited about it, too. I chose a fictional memoir motif to transmit the gospel in, and I'm looking to appeal more to the spiritual-oriented audience than I am to the religious-oriented audience. Although the religious, I have attempted to, you know, throw out some hooks there and get them to keep an open mind about the universality of God's love in the book. And anyway, it comes out in October of 2012.
That's awesome.
Congratulations, bro. That's
yes, sir.
That has been quite, how many years have you been working on that?
Oh, jeepers. Well, it was years ago that I said, hey, Glenn, can I go up to your house in Eagle River and spend a few days writing? So it's been 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, what's the book called, Pep?
Okay, here's why I called. Thinking about the
either we have a bad phone line, which is very possible, or your hearing is not as good as the last time you were online. What is the book called?
Yeah.
Pep. Pep.
Yeah.
We're here. What is your book entitled?
The title of the book is called Touching Spirit, The Letters of Menominee, and it takes place 75 or so years ago in a series of letters written to a young white boy by an Indian man.
And you were able to weave the gospel into this fictional book very nicely.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the first general revelation of God and his nature, of course, is the creation. And so I use that primarily. You know, the specific revelation that we call the scriptures didn't come along until, well, some might say millions of years later. But, so yeah, there's no problem looking at the creation and seeing the gospel there.
That's awesome.
That's wonderful.
Listen, here's why I call.
Yeah,
I want you to get to these other two fellas who wrote this book. I'm very interested in hearing the rest of the broadcast. But as I consider the person of Jesus, it's often crossed my mind, when do you think Jesus began to see himself as the Christ? How might that have dawned on him? You know, what's your opinion about how Jesus began to view himself as the Son of God?
That's awesome.
Ah, peppy.
Lapusky. All right, listen.
Now, while I personally cannot give you a point in time that may have happened, I do know that throughout his teaching ministry, he knew he was the Christ. He knew he was the Son of God throughout his teaching ministry.
Yes.
There's, you know, others have had questions as to when did he know he was going to be the sacrifice, and, you know, at what point did that take place. And there's things, the best that we can do is surmise about some of these, unless there's something very specific in the scriptures that would let us know, you know, that he knew, you know, from his birth, or I know it was all in his heart, as all these things are now in our heart from birth.
Yes.
And, of course, hearing the scriptures and studying the scriptures constantly, and if they were all about him, as he understood, he understood during his teaching ministry that all the scriptures were about him. Now, he studied those scriptures from a very early age. So at some point, obviously, to have the audacity to say all of these scriptures are all, can you imagine?
No.
Put yourself in that place 2,000 years ago in a Jewish society, and the temple is right there, the sacrifices and ceremonies and the 4,000 years of history of Israel is there. And a man comes on the scene and says, "This is all about me." That just is shattering.
we know at 12 years old, at least according to the New Testament writings, somehow Miriam and Joseph take off back towards Jerusalem. And, cause they had to go back, I believe this was coming out of Bethlehem, if I'm not mistaken. And, I've been to that church, actually, in Bethlehem. And, well, it's not a church, but it's the, not renovated, what the, Pap, help me here. When you dig up,
Are you talking about the birth place?
An excavated synagogue. And that was, it wasn't in Bethlehem. The Esri boys will know, I guarantee you. Capernaum. It was in Capernaum. And somehow, Yeshua gets separated from his mom and dad. And when they go back to get him, his response is, "I've got to be about my father's business."
Yeah,
sure. At 12 years old. So
yeah.
He may or may not have known that he was the prophesied Christ who was going to atone for the sin of the world, but that's a pretty radical thing for a 12-year-old Jewish kid to say, plus having not listened to his parents to come along for the ride home.
Yeah.
So, yeah. All right, Pepe.
Good question, though, Pep.
Pepe,
yes.
Pepe.
Thank you very much, and I hope that my hearing is better next time.
Me too, Pepe.
I'll be praying for my ears.
Yeah, I will pray for your ears too, or maybe not. Yeah, Pap, we're not going to pray for yours, but there's this really fantastic new invention.
It's called a hearing aid.
It's called a Q-tip. And you reach in there. Don't go too deep because you don't want to stick the wax further in, but just kind of dig it out. It's pretty disgusting, actually.
You're a mean man, Mr. Rabbi.
Indeed. All right. Pepe Le Pew.
Bye.
We love you.
Bye.
There goes Pep Washburn, author and medicine man of the Gospel Revolution.
It's author night.
It is. You know, Pep was so excited to see the website of the Essaries. He was really, really thrilled. He responded after he looked at it immediately. Mm-hmm. And Pep actually took after an agent, which took him a while to get, got his agent, and then the agent actually got him a publisher.
I know.
It's just fantastic.
The gospel is getting out.
I love that. The gospel is getting out. See, it's getting out through so many ways. See, when Lady Gaga, Michael, says Jesus is the new black,
yep.
What does she mean by that?
Well, that's her fashion song. I am a Gaga fan. I got my claw up in the air right now. And
Gaga.
So that is her fashion song, and the new black, Jesus is the black, is in the fashion world means it goes with anything.
It goes with anything.
Black goes with anything. Black fits everywhere. Anything. There's no, you can't go wrong with black. So that's what she's saying, is that Jesus is the new black. Jesus goes with everything. Jesus is, and of course we would take that the step far further and say Jesus is everything, and he is all in all.
Yeah.
And but to know that these kids are getting even an inkling of the all-inclusiveness of Jesus himself through Lady Gaga is just, to me, it's fantastic. I don't care what people say about her. I love her. I saw a video clip the other day from one of these, I forget which one it was. It was one of the popular TV evangelists, and they went through and decoded every bit of her album, every picture, everything, and its demonic symbols.
Right.
It's all of this stuff, and it's like, you know what? If she's demonic, she reveals more about Jesus through her demonic stance than you guys have ever revealed about Jesus in your entire ministry life.
Well, they've been doing this ever since Elvis Presley started shaking his hips.
I know.
But then once Elvis recorded his gospel album, then Elvis was good to go.
And then he was holy.
Then he got fat and died on his potty.
Yes.
And now
on my birthday.
Really?
Yes. I am still ticked off at him.
Elvis Presley died on April 16th. Or April, what are you? You're April 16th, right? August 16th. August 16th.
He died the year my middle daughter was born and died on the day that I was born.
That's just not right.
I know, and of course, me and Madonna share a birthday, so we're both, Madonna and I both are really upset that Elvis Presley spoiled our birthday by dying on it.
Elvis Presley died on Madonna and Mike Williams' birthday?
That's exactly right. The
ladies and gentlemen, if there is anything that is clear that God is not in control of day-to-day situations, that's it. This is Glenn Klein Online. Welcome to the Gospel Revolution. We are glad to have you along. And now, as we foretold earlier, without any further ado, please welcome online from the great state of Illinois, the land of Lincoln, please welcome Steve and Aaron Essary. Essaries!
Hey, how's it going? Nice to be here.
Have you guys done a radio interview yet about your book?
No, we haven't. This is the first one.
I bet you never thought when you would be promoting the book on the radio, which you will be doing a lot of, I'm sure, that it will be preceded by a conversation of why Lady Gaga is an incredible ambassador of the gospel.
Well, I can't see any better way to start. I'm a Lady Gaga fan myself.
All right. Please identify yourselves so we know which one is Steve and which one is Aaron.
Okay, I'm Steve.
And I'm Aaron.
And I'm Bo.
I'm the one that sounds like Kermit the Frog on the radio, okay?
That's not true.
It's a little true.
Yeah.
All right, fellas. Well, we are so excited. And it just was very wonderful and coincidental that Pep Washburn called right before you guys, because he was particularly excited about seeing your website and about your book in the hour we least expected.
Cool.
Steve, what was the inspiration behind that title that Michael has called absolutely brilliant?
Well, it all comes from Matthew 24, when Jesus said that the end would come in the hour we least expected. One day, me and Aaron were talking on the phone, and we'd already started writing the book, but we had no idea what the title was going to be. And we were just talking about how ironic it is that the hour that everybody thought Jesus was defeated, the hour that he's dying on the cross, that would be the hour that you would least suspect that he would be the most victorious. I mean, everybody, matter of fact, I just had a conversation at the mall the other day while we were signing books. A man came by and we were talking about the book, and he was, of course, very upset with us, and said that, we said, well, you know, our book is all about the cross, which is the climactic event of the Bible. And he said, no, no, no. He said, the climactic event of the Bible is when Jesus comes back and the end of the world happens. Well, yeah, exactly, at the cross. That's the climactic,
yes,
climactic point of the Bible. And that's what we were discussing. Like, how ironic is it that the hour we would least suspect or least expect that Jesus would have total victory would be when he's, you know, on the cross dying.
If I could interject, you know, the fact that he said it was a time we least expect should tell us that we probably wouldn't see it until we had the retrospect, until we could look back and say, you know, do the old slap
absolutely
on the forehead and say, oh, gosh, that's what he was talking about. I mean, he gave us the information that it was going to be unexpected, you know. So
yeah.
I think that's a really nice clue.
The entire, interesting thing, guys, which I know that you've seen this, the entire thing about the, quote, as Paul said, the mystery of the gospel, it was all designed to be seen after the fact. None of it was designed to be seen before the fact. And which is just so amazing about the prophecies about Jesus, that they are, it is just, you know, I posted something a couple of weeks ago about how odd it was that that anybody who would have tried to reconstruct these prophecies to, quote, make this come true, which is what some have said, as you know, and but no one would have had Jesus to be born in Nazareth,
You mean Bethlehem?
Yeah, in Bethlehem.
Well,
sorry.
Definitely nobody would have him be born in Nazareth. That we can say without.
Nobody would have had him to be friends with women. I mean, none of these things would possibly be true. So it was like all of this was part of the cover story, if you will. And I don't mean the cover story revealing, but the cover-up story. And there was a cover-up. And a dramatic and amazing cover-up that once the cross took place, and I love how you put that, it can only be seen in retrospect. It can only be seen in hindsight. And that's how we have to look at the scriptures and accept what Jesus said, that they're all about him. I love your title. I totally love your title.
Well, you know, Christians are so good at pointing the finger at Jews and saying, you know, how could they not recognize Jesus? Well, it's because he came in a way that they didn't expect. And now, you know, we're saying, is it possible that if the Jews, the ones that were first given the oracles of God, if they didn't expect him to come this way, is it possible that, you know, what we're looking for might happen in a way that we don't expect?
You guys, you have to understand that not only did the Jewish people not understand, they were made to not understand on purpose.
We
still want to apply the way that God dealt with humanity before the cross to our current day. But where God has fulfilled everything in Christ at the cross, Michael, back in the day, back in pre-cross days, he was manipulating and controlling and dominating everything to the point where even, I believe it's Isaiah, said that he would not allow them to see.
Yes, absolutely.
Exactly.
In John chapter 12, he said that, in quoting Isaiah, see, John knew that revelation after demanding in his writings, you got to believe, 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 90 times in the book of John, the term believe or belief shows up in some way. And then to get to John chapter 12, and then he starts quoting Isaiah saying, but none of them believed because the prophet said they wouldn't. And that God would blind their eyes and stop their ears, lest seeing and hearing they be converted. It was, the goal was not to convert man. The goal
sounds
was
like
to redeem man.
Huh?
Yes, conversion is a conspiracy. This is not a conversion. This is a redemption.
Right, and again, there's an order of things. The redemption happened in the mind of God. It says that Christ was crucified before the foundations of the earth.
Yeah.
The redemption, historically, is now an over 2,000-year fact that everybody has been redeemed. But salvation, conversion, if you will, that comes later. And that's an ongoing situation. We're talking hold on, see, I want to reset here. This is Steve and Aaron Essery, the co-authors of the just released book, In the Hour They Least Expect It, or we least expect it. And
right.
And so we all our lines are taken right now. We're going to be taking your calls later. You can email us questions if you got questions for the Essery boys at webcast@gospelrevolution.com. Can you guys stay with us for a little bit?
Yeah, sure.
All right, well, we're going to take our break, and we will be back with the Esseries, Mike Williams, Glenn Klein Online, coming to you live from the Bay of the Holy Spirit right here on the Gospel Revolution Radio Network.
In the beginning, God said, let us make man in our own image, male and female, and called them Adam. And it was good. In the fall, the image of God was corrupted, but not forever.
When God created man in his own image, and we're not talking about somebody else creating an image, we're talking about God himself creating man in his own image. And then the fall of man, God knew he would have to destroy his own image. Let me tell you something I know now about the new creation, that your heart is designed by God to suffer, endure, and recover from all loss, no matter how horrific the loss is.
The Image of God. This 6-CD series is available for $48 plus shipping and handling, or download it now for $24 by clicking the download link at gospelrevolution.com. The Image of God. Get your copy today.
Michael, earlier on the show, you said that the human brain the human brain should think a certain way. But in this new creation that you mentioned in the spot that Robert Moore just talked about, you're talking about an image that has been destroyed, but the human heart has been created and redeemed in a certain way. But as many sects of Christianity would say, that the human brain is designed to work a certain way, the human brain is not designed to think other than the thoughts that come to it. And there's a big difference between the heart and the brain.
Yeah, absolutely. And in the new creation, we know that we all got a new heart. We do not have the heart of stone. We do not have the heart that is not infused with truth before the cross. This is a whole new creation. The Adam, they called Jesus the last Adam for a reason. He was the last of the human race. The human race became extinct 2,000 years ago, and a whole new creation. That which was created in the garden became extinct 2,000 years ago, and an entire new creation appeared on the scene. And when it talks about a new creation, it literally is talking about a species that has never existed on this planet before. So we have a new creature, a new creation, a new heaven, a new earth. Everything is made brand new.
and including the heart. So we have this perfect heart that has all of this perfect information. And I'm sure one of the things that Steve and Aaron enjoy is the knowing that, just like you're setting up in the mall the other day. I got so excited when somebody told me you guys did that. And they, I heard that you sold 5 books. I was excited. It's like, man, that's 5 people, you know? And
fun.
But yes, absolutely. And the amazing thing is that you get to talk to people that you know this is already in their heart. This is not
exactly.
Something. This is not something they don't intuitively know. The reaction you get is from the legalistic brain that has been trained to think differently than their heart thinks.
Exactly. That's exactly
that makes
the
a lot
case.
Of sense.
How many times?
Yeah,
what's nice is,
what's nice is that, just like you said, this is in people's hearts. God's spirit is in everybody, so this message resonates. Now, like you said, the ones who have been trained in the legalistic ways, just like we were, and taught forever, they're the ones that put up the defenses, but people that don't have those defenses and don't have that training, when you say this to them, they just light up. They just light
just
up because something
sense.
Inside of them jumps and says, you know, I've never heard that before, but something about that, that's got to be it. That's got to be it.
Yeah.
We're talking with Steve and Aaron Essery, the co-authors of the new book, In the Hour We Least Expected. How many times have you guys heard this from Christians or quasi-Christians? God, I hope that's true, or I wish that was true.
Oh, yeah. We've heard that quite a bit. Our dad, as a matter of fact, when we first started studying this, so that was the first thing he said was, gosh, I hope it's true, but I just can't, you know, possibly see how it could be.
Right, because that is the intuitive nature of the human heart speaking and circumventing that religious and legalistic indoctrination. We're talking with Steve and Aaron Essery from the book and the website, by the way, In the Hour We Least Expected. It's in thehourweleastexpected.com, right, fellas?
It's just the hour we least expected.
Oh, the hour.
In the hour. Just the hour we least expected.
The hour
.com.
Least expected, yeah.
Just the flat-out hour is what it is.
Correct.
So as we continue on this Wednesday night edition of the Gospel Revolution, fellas, give us a little idea of, as Michael has often said, everybody's story is the same, but some of the specifics are different. So give us a little bit of idea of what your guys' background is and how you came upon the gospel.
Oh, sure. Really, it all started back in 2007. I mean, me and Aaron both were very traditional, Church of God mostly, most of our lives, very charismatic, very legalistic. Didn't really realize that we were that way, but that's, you know, now looking back, that's how we were. And then one day, I had no idea that my life was going to change. I come home, and a friend of mine was getting her hair cut by my wife, and I walked in, and she was a youth pastor, and I asked her, we had just started going to her church, and I said, hey, I'm glad you're here. I said, I want to let you know I'm willing to do whatever it takes to help you win more kids. What can I do to help? We got to get, you know, save these kids from hell. And she turned to me and said, well, I'm glad that you brought that up. She said, there's something I've wanted to talk to you about for quite a few years now, but I've avoided it, and it's time. And she started to tell me that she had been listening to a guy named Mike Williams, and that he was talking about how that it's possible that maybe everybody's going to go to heaven. And I stopped her right there. I stood up out of my chair, and I began to pace the floor. I was upset. I told her there's no way that could be true. I scolded her, how can you even talk that way, after everything that we've been through, we've all gone to the same churches all these years, and now you're telling me that, you know, everything I've been taught's wrong, and she, well, just listen to this. No, I'm not going to listen to any of it. I refused any teaching. I said, no, if what you're saying is true, then some other man has already messed me up, and now you want me to listen to somebody else? I said, no, here's what I'm going to do. I said, I'm going to prove you're wrong. Well, that night I spent 3 hours in my Bible, and I got frustrated, and I put it down and said, okay, tomorrow I'm going to prove she's wrong. The next night I spent 4 hours, and I got frustrated. The next day I went to my brother Aaron, and I said, you're not going to believe what this girl said. And he said, well, Steve, he said, that's crazy. He said, I tell you what we need to do. We just need to prove that she's wrong. I said, yeah, we do. Maybe you should help me with that. And long story short, we put hours and hours and hours into this, and we could not. We set out to write a 3- or 4-page essay just to prove she was wrong. Here we are 4 years later. We have a 252-page book that absolutely says that she was right, and it all happened because of you.
So you were actually out to produce an essay.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's right.
That's awesome. And all right, so and then I remember getting a call from you, Steve. Back in the day, even in the pre-Sean days of the Gospel Revolution webcast, we like to call them the BS days before Sean. And so you were right in the middle, and then you had Michael come down to Southern Illinois,
that's right,
an area that he's very familiar with, and. Have you continued to, obviously you guys wrote this book together, but how much gospel are you guys talking about and thinking about and meditating about on a daily or weekly basis?
Well, you know, we've taken a few weeks off.
Go ahead.
Always fighting for the mic time. this is all we think about. This has become our life. Before this, back in the CAM days, we call it CAM, Currently Accepted Message of Modern Christianity. That's what we used to be. We say currently accepted because, you know, that's all changing with this new Reformation that's going on. But, you know, we took it very seriously back then, and I spent my life, so did my brother, every single day trying to figure out how to save people from going to hell. So we, you know, this has always been in the forefront of our life. We've always been involved in ministry, so, you know, it's just different now, but this is kind of, you know, the life's goal is to get this true gospel to the world, and so it's very much a part of our everyday lives. This is it.
That's Aaron Essery, and we have Steve Essery, the brothers Essery, the authors of The Hour We Least Expected. It's gospel, folks, and we highly encourage you to go to the website at thehourweleastexpected.com, order a bunch of copies, and we know that you guys also donated several copies to the Gospel Revolution, which we will be happy to present to people as part of our upcoming
Great.
Start of Winter Pledge Drive. What would you guys say is the biggest influence that you've seen in your individual lives the gospel has had as you have meditated this and contemplated this on a consistent basis?
Well, since I'm older, I'll go first. I think.
Well, you know what they say, Steve? They always say age before beauty, right?
That's right. Yeah, I'm sure my brother will back you up on that one.
Well, he was born first because he needed 3.5 years of a head start just to be able to keep up with me, you know.
Right on. I got you.
I would say love for my fellow man. I mean, I did not realize how judgmental I was before. I remember driving by bars and seeing people walk in and out of them and thinking, gosh, look at those people. You know, I can't believe they live like this. And I can't believe, you know, I mean, just every single kind of person that is typically judged through modern Christianity, I was right there, and now, I mean, my entire outlook on life has changed. I love everybody in a way that I've never loved before, and if that's wrong, then, well, like the old song says, I don't want to be right.
Well, the CAM taught us to be that way. You know, the church did. They taught us to look down on these people. They taught us that these people were just miserable, unhappy people, and they were just trying to fill that hole with alcohol or drugs or whatever, you know how it goes. And so, yeah, I mean, they fostered that outlook in us and in everybody else to look at people that way. So, yeah, now one of the first things we noticed is all this went away, all the different groups of people that the church looks down on so hard. Suddenly, all of that was gone from us, and it was so easy to look and absolutely love everybody on the planet. I mean, this facilitates the true unconditional love that they say God has for us, that God does have for us. This facilitates that type of thinking, and that's just one more clue to let you know that, you know, we're on the right side.
Steve and Aaron Essery. I'm going to say Aaron and Steve Essery.
Just because.
All right, so I'm going to
deserves a break here.
I'm going to ask you guys to go a little deeper now because I understand what you mean, and people say you're telling me that Saddam Hussein and Muammar Gaddafi and Osama bin Laden, and Billy Graham right now, by the way, is probably on his way out at any minute. As we went online, the report out of North Carolina is that he was rushed to the hospital. I mean, he's in his 90s. So even Billy Graham is going to heaven. And we say, yeah, well, how can that be? Well, because the love of God resides inside of them. And so a lot of people that are around the planet in over 160 countries now, this webcast goes to, could say, all right, I get that. I understand what you guys are talking about. But I want to go a little deeper. And I want to hear from you guys what in your personal lives, tendencies, emotional responses, just go with whatever comes first to your mind, that the gospel, the influence of the gospel on your soul has revealed itself to you in a very personal and significant way.
Well, I think that for me, guilt is gone. I mean, as a, I don't know how other Christians feel, but I know that I felt guilty every day of the week when I was in the CAM.
What does CAM mean again?
CAM is the currently accepted message.
The currently accepted message.
Or the most commonly accepted message.
Currently common, crappy, whichever C you want to use. Huh?
I like that.
I prefer currently because I see it as on the way out.
Absolutely.
Exactly. But guilt and shame, I guess I never felt like I was good enough before. And I tried. I tried as hard as I could, to be the kind of Christian that I was, told I was supposed to be. I did all the right things. And, I mean, I was called the golden boy in church by so many people. And now, what they didn't know was behind the scenes, I sinned every single day. I didn't realize that they sinned every day, but I knew I did. And whenever I went home and sinned, I'd come back the next day and thinking, well, gosh, I got to get saved again. I missed it. And I'm a bad example for people because I sin. And now looking back, I see that everybody sins. And sure, it's easy to say that, I'm not excited about the fact that someone like Hitler or Muammar Gaddafi, I mean, I understand why people are upset that, people of that caliber, that committed such heinous acts, I understand why they're upset that they might, be in heaven. But look at the little old lady down the street that never did anything wrong, and all she ever did was say, that Jesus stuff just doesn't make any sense to me, and I'm not going to believe it. You're telling me that she's going to burn right next to Hitler? There's no way. There's no way that can be true.
So, Michael, when you hear Steve say that the caliber of person like Hitler or Gaddafi or whomever, what comes to your mind?
Well, when I think about them being in heaven, I guess I actually get it. I'm very excited about that. I admit to being, an odd duck occasionally. But I'm thrilled that they are going to be in heaven because that is the truest example of how powerful this gospel is that they are no less and no more in the eyes of God than anyone else on this planet. And the power of that is the focus of this gospel. And so I honestly, I get excited. I'm glad they're going to be in heaven.
Don't get me wrong that I'm not excited about that. I guess what I'm saying is that I understand the mindset of those.
Yes,
that
they're not excited about it.
Yeah, they're not excited about it, and I get that. I totally understand that.
Their minds are trapped in the knowledge of good and evil. And but really, Steve, that's one of our best selling points is to stick to that and to be very certain about it. I remember one of the most wonderful debates that I had years ago was that very issue, the Hitler issue. And a lady stood up in the back of the church and, well, I'm just upset. Why are you upset? Because you're saying even Hitler's going to heaven. And I said, okay, So we marched through this whole thing as to what she was saying and why she believed it. And so she assured us that the only people that were going to heaven were believers. Now, this is somebody that was like us, who was sold completely into Christianity. And I said, no, only believers are going to heaven, which is what you and I would have said. And then I asked her, I said, well, so babies are going to hell. No, no, of course there was the baby exemption. And
right.
Then I dealt with, you know, mental retardation. Oh, no, there's an exemption for them. I told her, no. I said, I'm actually glad. I said, we're getting more people in heaven all the time. And so we've got believers and babies up to the age of 13 and the mentally handicapped. And so this kept going on. And so finally she had said, you know, how offended she was with my doctrine that would allow Hitler into heaven. And I said, you know what? I said, I'm equally as offended by yours that would send 10 million Jewish people, 6 million Jewish people to the same everlasting burning fire as Hitler because they didn't believe in Jesus.
Exactly.
And at that point, she got up and walked out of the room. So, but anyway, yeah, I think that's one of our... isn't it odd that the thing that people oppose the most can be the centerpiece at the table for a discussion about the gospel?
Oh, yeah. And it comes up so often, and I never hesitate to say, oh, yeah, Hitler's definitely in heaven already. You know,
yeah.
It's not a hesitation for me at all.
I remember rejoicing more than most.
I remember when SEAL Team 6 took out Osama bin Laden a few months ago, and you know, I heard about it, and I watched the news coverage with interest, and I was just kind of walking in my bedroom, and I just got incredibly emotionally moved by the reality that he was in heaven.
Yeah.
I mean, it moved me in a very, very powerful way. And that is one of the ways that I could understand the implication and the effect of the gospel on my soul. Because as a Jewish guy growing up, to think that I would see Hitler, well, for anybody, but especially when you had direct descendants, or excuse me, ancestors, murdered by the Nazi regime in Eastern Europe in the 1930s and 40s, to think that the man that was at the head of that and perpetrated all that was as perfect and righteous and holy in the sight of God as Yeshua himself, that was a pretty dramatic shift in thinking, I got to say. Aaron, what would you say has been a real personal effect on the gospel on your thinking or on your soul?
You know, the burden of trying to get the entire world saved, you know,
yeah.
That, boy, that's heavy. That's not easy or light. And, but I was taken on every single day, and so was my brother. We were, working just, feverishly trying to figure out the most efficient way, to get people saved. I mean, we had it, you know, down to a science, down to an art. I mean, that's all we spent our time on, is trying to save people. Because if it's our job to do that and spread that gospel and convince people that they're messed up and that they have to change and have to conform, that's going to take some work. And if it's my job to do that and I don't do that job well, then people at the other end are going to die and burn in hell forever if I don't perform well. And, you know, I believed what my teachers taught me. I believed it more than they did because, you know, I was actually out there trying, you know, working my guts out every single day, stressing. And since I've come to this realization, got this revelation, all that's just been lifted off, and I can just walk through life free, and I can look at people no matter what they're doing, no matter who they are, no matter what they look like, and I can rest assured and just know that I will see them in heaven too. And that is just, I can't explain how much of a relief that is. Well, you guys know, you know.
Well, I mean, you could say that burden is light and that yoke is easy. You could say that.
Oh, on the other side?
Right now you could say it.
Well, I can say it now. I couldn't say it then.
No, and I'm saying the burden is just not there, Michael. I mean, you talk about a light burden.
Yeah, it's definitely gone. You know, one of the things, guys, that I
that there's a lot of things that thrill me about what you've done and what you're doing in promoting the gospel. But the one of the things that is thrilling to me is the degree of dedication you had to Christianity before. And it seems to me that I've always observed that those who have had the most ardent commitment to the doctrine of Christianity are those who are the most susceptible to understanding the gospel. Now, if people were just kind of pew warmers, just like you said, you know, you guys did like I did. They all taught us to win souls. I went out and did it. And they taught you to do it, but they stayed at the church and did Sunday morning sermons, and you actually went out and did it. It seems that those who take this to heart, that doctrine to heart, it seems like their entire being is even more cultivated than the average Christian for the understanding of the gospel, because the extremes of that burden, I think you put it very well, Aaron, that is a very heavy burden when you begin to think that, that the entire world is going to hell. I remember a conversation that was either between me and Steve, or it was with Kim about you guys. And it was with Kim. I'm sure it was with Kim about you guys, who is Kim is the one who that had started listening to my material several years back. And you were weighing, somebody was, maybe you can remember this conversation she related to me. You guys were weighing how many people there were in Southern Illinois, how many people you were able to reach, and how many were left.
Oh, yeah. In the two counties right next to us, we live in Williamson County. The next closest county is Franklin County. Back in the day, we did a study and found out that there were, in junior high and high school, because that was the age that we were mostly going after, we added up the populations of all of the junior high and high schools and came up with 10,000 teenagers right here in our back door. Then we did a study. We got on in the phone book and called every single church that we could find in the phone book and on the internet. Wow. And asked them simply how many kids go to your church that are, junior high and high school age. We come up with less than 800 out of 10,000. That's 9,200 kids that were on their way to hell because our churches were not doing a very good job. That's 92% that we were missing.
Well, forget about Williamson and Franklin counties. How about Bangkok, bro?
Right.
Well, that's the thing.
How about Kathmandu?
The way this all extrapolates out. But see, the thing that they did here was that they took into consideration the reality at hand.
Right. You guys got too logical and your heart, which has been imputed with the wisdom of God, was actually activated even before you knew the gospel.
Just looking at any situation logically and rationally is certainly the wisdom of God. But that was very, I remember that story. Of all the things that I remember Kim sharing that story from you guys with me these years ago, and how that you had concluded what a hopeless situation you were in, which is the most powerful thing that someone can come to, is an absolute state of hopelessness about the world.
We didn't even look at it as hopeless. We actually, it made us work harder. I've been accused of this actually, of saying, well, you guys seen that it was so hard to do, so you just gave up and come to a different conclusion so you wouldn't have to work so hard. No, that's not how it happened at all. We were devising a plan, a way to bring union among these churches and help track attendance and try to get that number up.
All right, from a scale of 1 to 10, what would be your level of effort that you made in your Christianity days or when you were under the influence of the CAM thought?
I'd say about a 28.
No, 1 to 10. Give me a number.
I'd have to give it a 9.
Okay, alright, so you worked at a scale of 9 back in the Christianity days. What would be the scale of effort that you've made in completing the printing and the entire, process of the book, in the hour we least expected? 1 to 10.
I would have to say it's at least a 9.
Yeah, at least. It's been tough. It definitely took dedication for sure.
Right, so apparently, the after the cross perspective, the gospel perspective, has that not seen you guys work any less hard? It's just the effort has been in a different area and with a different emphasis.
And it's and this side is fun, and there's joy here versus pain, suffering, sweat, tears, you know, toiling. Not only are we, you know, working just as hard this way, but now it's fun.
It is fun, that. All right, fellas. Well, listen, I cannot thank you enough for taking the time to say that we are thrilled with your effort, and with the result of your effort would be the understatement of this particular day. So, thanks, guys.
Before you guys go, let me say this to you personally. Number one is I really appreciate both of you and all of the effort that you're putting in to sharing the gospel and the hours that you labored to search the scriptures to find the evidence that you have in your book. And I want you to know that myself personally, Mike Williams Ministries and the Gospel Revolution are 100% with you and behind you to promote your book in any way that we possibly can, and to support both of you personally in any possible way that we can. We're here for you.
Well, that means a lot to us, and we thank you very much for that. And we also appreciate you and all the work that you've done, you know, before we ever even heard of this. I mean, if it wasn't for the work you did years before with a lot less supporters than you have today, we would not be here right now.
All right, you guys.
Thank you. Thank you, guys.
Thank you very much.
Good night, Aaron. Good night, Steve.
And good night.
Bye. There's Steve and Aaron Essery.
Awesome.
The Brothers Essery, the authors, the co-authors of In the Hour We Least Expected. Check it out, inthehourweleastexpected.com. And you'll enjoy. I guarantee you'll enjoy. We've got a few minutes left here on the Gospel Revolution webcast. Those lines now that the Esseries just evacuated are now available for you. We would love to hear from you in our final few minutes at 1-800-436-3260. Sean is waiting with bated breath to take your call. 800-436-3260, all over North America and worldwide at 813-425-5773. If you have any comments or questions about our discussion with the Esseries or anything that is on your heart or mind, please pick up the phone and give us a call now, because those lines have been busy. So if you got a busy signal, that is why. 800-436-3260, 800-436-3260. One of the fellas that I think got the busy signal is a guy that we normally hear from the great city of Calgary, Alberta, north of the border, that will be hosting a Grace Conference coming up here in January. The very lovely and talented, the Prime Minister of the Gospel Revolution, Vic Dobrenin. So he had trouble getting in, so he emailed us. And you guys know you can always email us, right, at webcast@gospelrevolution.com. So here's what he says, Michael. Here's his question. And this is very much congruent with our previous Hitler and Osama and Muammar Gaddafi discussion. He says, why do good people do evil things? I understand the gospel, but evil is still a fact of life. Hitler is redeemed, yet he was a great perpetrator of evil. Is it just a lack of understanding of the gospel that makes people, that would be everybody, do evil things?
Yes.
Or conversely, if everybody had an understanding of the gospel, would evil be eliminated?
That is what we extrapolate. We have such great hope. I have such great hope for the future. And yes, these brains are deplete of truth. and a brain deplete of truth, of unity and oneness with God is like a child with a book of matches in a barn full of hay. You are, and don't expect me to do any more farm analogies because I don't know what I'm talking about. But,
which is really saying something for a Tennessee and Illinois boy. Right there.
I remember I went to a couple of them, but I don't know anything about them. But the brain, the mind that is void of the gospel, of the truth of the gospel, can be a very maniacal place. And not all brains that are not influenced by the gospel are maniacal, but they certainly can become that way. And
so what's your issue
of verifiable mental illnesses and things like that, or mental retardation or whatever, mentally handicapped. But I'm talking about just the everyday person.
Well, I mean, would Hitler count as a person who's an everyday person or a person who is beset by mental illness?
Yeah, I think he would count as very. I mean, that was his greatest dread, that he was very bland and boring and everyday, and that's what he was trying to escape, was to be something special and to be something something that he wasn't. And would the gospel have affected the way Hitler thought and therefore affected the way he did? If I understand anything, which I am a buff of the World Wars and especially the Hitler era, and I've been to Germany. Went to his headquarters castle, castle that he had his that he and the SS occupied, and I've learned all the history of it that I can, and what motivated him, and all of this. I do think that in his case, especially since we're focusing on him, that the gospel would have made all of the difference in the world. I mean, my goodness, just think. I mean, he saw one group of people as absolutely evil themselves. That's where evil actions come from, is when you identify any group of people as evil.
Are not even just evil, as true as that is, but other people as not as consequential as you and your
absolutely.
People.
Anything less than.
This is how, with, I mean, incredible respect and honor to the men and women of the military, to the militaries of our nations around the world that have gone into places like Afghanistan and especially Iraq, but Afghanistan too. When you consider the number of perfectly innocent people that have been massacred by our desire to put an end to terrorism. And if you, speaking of extrapolation, if you extrapolate that policy to Great Britain or Canada or the United States or Australia or Israel or so many, I mean, I would say the vast majority of countries around the world that this webcast goes to, and you say, here's what's going to happen. We've got a mass murderer. He's holed up in a neighborhood house. And we've got to get to this mass murderer. He's trapped, but we've got to get to him. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to knock out 3 blocks worth of real estate. And yes, it's horrible. It's tragic. It is just the fog of war that occurs. And even if every person in the homes that surrounded this mass murderer's home is killed, it's still worth getting to this one guy. Nobody would do that. Nobody in any of these countries that I just mentioned, and so many of the countries that you guys are listening to right now. And yet, here we have so-called Western civilized cultures and societies, Christian cultures, if you will, making the decision at the highest level of government, not just one leader, but entire bodies of leaders, making a decision that, yes, the so-called collateral damage is worth all of that. Michael, as Vic asks, and he really answers his own question, the lack of the influence of the gospel on these bodies of leaders. has concluded that that kind of collateral damage is acceptable in other countries, it would not be acceptable in their own neighborhood.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, how that would be done differently, I can't even begin to tell you. It's just that I know that the gospel will help us find better ways of handling these things. And believe me, my entire heart's desire is for others to take the impact of the gospel and take it into as many areas that we can possibly introduce it to, because it needs to be involved in every part and every element of life. That's the reason I'm so excited about Steve and Aaron. I mean, they will carry this to people's hearts that I will never see. And even if it was just the five people at the mall the other day, my goodness, is that worth it? That is worth it. But you see, others would say on the other side of this fence is that just getting five people would not be worth something like that, you know,
right,
to put such effort into it.
Well, here's one thing we can definitely say, that the current accepted message or the current way of doing things, to do it differently, do it differently from the CAM, would be a step forward. Without a doubt,
it would be better.
Without a doubt, beautiful.
We got to move forward. You know, that's the, and I believe that that is the influence of the gospel on the mind individually, and then of course, the thing that we have not seen is how the gospel will influence this planet collectively. Now, we probably have seen some, because there's a dawning of understanding of grace that has come around the world that previously wasn't here. I think that a lot of the innovation and advancements that we've made have been out of that. I mean, my goodness, when you get a man like Steve Jobs, who has so advanced our way of communicating alone, just in that area of communicating, who, by some understanding in his heart, did not separate the use of acid or whatever it was that he, whatever drug of choice he had. He said it was a very important part of his journey from any other part. So you see, and you say, oh my God, here they go. They're affirming that acid is okay. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that this was the freedom that this man's mind had to not think in terms of good and evil.
Right.
Therefore, his brain was free to think forward in ways that most brains are not.
I'll tell you one thing that you are saying, that for Steve Jobs and for other beautiful humans, it might have been okay.
Yes.
All right. There you go. So there's something to chew on. LSD and acid for some people not only might have been, was okay. So,
well, we got a lot of good music out of it, that's for sure.
And,
you'd have to erase all of the music done in the 60s and the 70s for sure. And I can do without the Beatles and Purple Rain. And
the prophetess of the Gospel Revolution, Lady Gaga, admits that many of her lyrics come under the influence of ganja. Marijuana.
Okay.
Cannabis. The weed. Herb. Shall I go on? Lady Gaga. We've gone from, let's see who we've mentioned tonight. We mentioned Lady Gaga. We mentioned Billy Graham. We mentioned Osama bin Laden, Saddam Hussein, and Hitler, and Muammar Gaddafi. And we mentioned Steve Jobs. These are all people that had the perfect, incredible, holy presence of God on the inside of them. To more or less of an extent, they expressed that a reality. And the question for you tonight, folks, is what is in your heart? What is in your reality that has been redeemed by the blood of Yeshua? And the Essary Boys revealed to the earth a book called In the Hour We Least Expected, Michael does this on a continual basis. By the way, if you want to read a great article on what we were just talking about, extrapolating the concept of the gospel affecting all those people's minds, just go to gospelrevolution.com and page down, and you can read Michael's article on extrapolating the future. You dare to extrapolate the future based on the equation of the gospel.
Absolutely. I not only dare to, I can't refrain from it.
I know. There's many more emails that we have not gotten to. If you haven't heard your email yet, please stay logged on. We will hopefully get to it in the next week or so. And a man that is very pleased right now that we are signing off is Mr. Sean O'Halloran, directly to my right. Right? You're looking good, Seanish. What's the score? Oh, that's not good. Tampa Bay is losing 4-2 to Detroit in the hockey. And see, we weren't going to talk about sports tonight or ever again, but we talked about it twice with the Green Bay Packers and the Tampa Bay Lightning and the Detroit Red Wings. Thank you, Mikey. This was,
thank you, Glenn.
I just got completely saved.
Absolutely, and thank everybody who's listening and participating in any way. And be sure and go online and purchase Stephen Aaron Estrey's book and enjoy and share it with others. Purchase some copies for some other people for Christmas.
A perfect Christmas, Hanukkah, or Festivus gift.
Absolutely.
No doubt. All right, well, that will do it for tonight. We want to thank the Esseries for calling in, Aaron and Steve, and also the medicine man, Pep Washburn. Want to thank Jeff Robertson, the administrator and the secretary of defense of the Gospel Revolution, also for being in communication with the Esseries and for setting up tonight's conversation. Also to Mr. Sean O'Halloran, the producer, engineer, and call screener extraordinaire of this effort. Until next time, this would be Glenn Klein Online saying, Shalom, everybody!